The next matter is in re interest of Nathaniel G.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Wasn't quite sure how to begin today's argument, just like I wasn't quite sure how to begin writing this brief, because I think there were a lot to talk about in this three-volume record. But I think a good way to begin today is an image I sometimes think of when I think of juvenile court, and that is the statement that bureaucracy and justice are a little bit like oil and vinegar, and they're not constantly agitated and naturally separated. And I think that's what happened here. The trial court made the determination that the rules of evidence didn't apply, and also made the determination, which was built on that rule, that the Daubert standards based on 2704 don't apply. And I think that was error, and I think that's the error that kind of permeated this entire case. Basically, the trial court ruled that 43-283, which states that the strict rules of evidence don't apply at termination hearing. I think his ruling boiled down to, he ruled that 43-283 trumps the clear requirement in 43-279, which states that the rules of evidence do apply at adjudication. The appellee in this case cites Rebecca P. for the principle that the rules of evidence, or the Daubert standards, don't apply at termination of parental right. Rebecca P. is easily distinguishable in this case. Rebecca P., in that case, the mother had been previously adjudicated. The termination was held separately and on the day years in the future. In the appellant's case, the court combined the adjudication and determination, and then subsequently determined that because it was tacking on the determination, that the rules of evidence didn't apply, even though the case hadn't been adjudicated. This created all kinds of problems related to Daubert, related to speedy trial, in fact. This case took approximately 10 months between removal of the children and adjudication slash termination. Kids were removed in October of 2007. The trial was held on several different occasions, and over a period of months, finally ending about 10 months after kids were first removed. There was one visit that occurred during that entire 10-month period. I think the timing of that one visit was suspect because it occurred right before the state filed their amended petition, which sought termination of parental rights. And the person who conducted that visit, ended up becoming one of the state's principal witnesses, her name was April Pleasant, and she talked a lot about the mom's demeanor, the appellant's demeanor during that visit, and talked about the interaction between the mother and the children. There were no visits scheduled after that, and none of them taking place. So, what we have in this case is, in October 2007, she was removed. 10 months later, the case is finally adjudicated. The court makes rulings like the speedy trial doesn't apply because of the case that says that the 90 days is merely directory. But the court, in making that ruling, inadvertently tripled the amount of time that's allowed in the statute. The statute allows them 90 days for adjudication. In this case, they would be more than three times that amount. I think the period is very important in this case. And if I will definitely raise this in the brief, I think this is important to look at. The timeline of when these kids were removed. On Monday, October 1st, and this is 2007, the child, Alexandria, voices to her mother that she had been molested by her mother's boyfriend, John Baseball.
Counsel, could I apologize for interrupting you and taking you back to what you talked about, but is it your contention that someplace in here the trial judge made an announcement of an incorrect application of the rules of evidence as to how the rules of evidence would be applied in this proceeding?
Actually, my position is that the court repeatedly made that determination. the court on lots of occasions and made determinations that the rules of evidence don't apply here.
So we had a joint hearing, adjudication and termination of parental rights proceeding. Do you think there's something that's error about that combined hearing?
I think that combination depends a little bit on the circumstances of the case. There's a case that police cites and that I discussed in my brief, MITM, I think it was incorrectly cited in one of the briefs. What MITM says is that it is combined the two. There's another case that I cite whose name escaped me that said that this practice should be frowned upon because of the confusion it creates. So you have a conflict between the two cases. MITM says it's okay to. But it also expresses some reservations about that. It says, well, we don't, it's exactly what it says, well, we don't condone them. We accept it in the case.
That's not uncommon that the appellate court might say, you know, this isn't the best way to do this, but it's not reversible. But looking at what the trial judge did in the transcript, it seems to me that essentially what he said was, you know, counsel, you're all aware from the case law, et cetera, how the rules of evidence apply when they apply at adjudication, they don't apply at termination, and so that's how we're going to proceed. Do you think, is that error?
Well, first of all, I respectfully disagree with the characterization because I don't believe that the trial court said specifically, hey, we're all aware that rules of evidence apply at adjudication, not at termination.
Could I ask you to speak up just a little bit?
Sorry.
There you go. Use your outside voice a little
bit. Thank you. Sorry. I think that the judge didn't quite make that characterization. The judge said, we're all aware that the termination, that rules of evidence don't apply at termination. And I don't think the trial court ever said this evidence comes in only for termination portion and it's excluded for the adjudication. I think the trial court's ruling is because termination was at issue, the case then became dispositional and 43-283 trumped 43-279. So I don't think there's ever evidence in the record that the court said the rules of evidence do apply here. I think that he across the board held that the rules of evidence don't apply because of the dispositional nature of the case.
So it's your position that what the trial judge did was say, you know, since we're doing a termination here, no rules of evidence apply, even though we're also doing an adjudication?
Correct. I think he said that clearly, especially with regard to Daubert. The Daubert standards don't apply. If the rules of evidence apply, the Daubert standards should clearly apply.
Well, isn't Daubert a concept that's applied to a particular category of scientific evidence? You don't have to have a Daubert hearing to have a radiologist testify that the x-ray shows a broken leg, do you?
No, but I think if the opponent files a Daubert motion about any expert testimony that's offered, then it becomes the proponent's duty to comply with the Daubert standards. And in this case, what happened is I think there was an attempt made. There was one question along the lines of, does this theory that dressing provocatively means child molestation, is that generally accepted? And the therapist / expert said yes. So I think there was minimal effort to incorporate some of that language from Daubert. So to answer your question, every radiologist does need to comply with Daubert, but when challenged, when the expert testimony is challenged, then the proponent does need to step forward, comply with Daubert, and then the trial court needs to act as a gatekeeper. And I don't think that happened here. The judge clearly held, no, because this is dispositional rules out the trial by Edward Donovan. I don't know how much time I have.
None.
Thank you very much. Counsel?
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Renee Mathias. I'm with the Deputy County Attorney for Douglas County. I represent the appellee. I think the first thing I would like to address is to kind of break the appellant's arguments down, one, in the combination of an adjudication and a termination. I think in re interest of Mitzi M. clearly states that this is allowable to the Supreme Court of Nebraska. The appellant cited in his brief a 1985 case that said this is frowned upon because it causes confusion. However, this is a 1999 case by the Supreme Court that says if you're terminating under section 1092 sub 1 through 5, you do not need a prior adjudication and you do not need to offer a parent a reasonable opportunity to rehabilitate themselves. And it analyzes this case based on the plain meaning of the statutes 291 and 292. Nowhere does it say let's take the circumstances of prior court involvement. It reads the statute and says, under this, as long as you're terminating under subsection 1 through 5, you can combine the two and go for termination right off the bat. Second, I think if you take a very close review of the record, nowhere in the record does Judge Johnson say the rule of evidence does not apply. He lets each of the parties know that we are aware of what the case law is, and he will apply the proper rulings as the evidence comes forward. If you look when we were having the discussion regarding the Daubert hearing, he even stated, evidence coming in under the adjudication part, rules of evidence will apply to those coming in under determination, the strict rules of evidence will not be enforced, however, fundamental fairness and due process will be the guidepost. Where I feel that the appellant has made a major flaw in their argument is by saying blanket statements of the rules of evidence don't apply, therefore that's reversible error, or Daubert doesn't apply, therefore it's reversible error. What statements, what pieces of evidence? I think the state did a very good job, if you look through the testimony, of stating what evidence is coming in for what. Starting with Detective Love on the prior criminal sexual assault cases regarding the children, I specifically stated these are coming in under subsection 3 and 4 when the appellant objected. It's hard for me to get up and stand up here and argue to you that the court did not make reversible error when I really don't know what statements that the appellant is saying were error in coming in.
I guess what I hear you saying is that it was, given the nature of the hearing, that it was then the appellant's burden if he thought a piece of evidence was being offered that needed to comply with the rules of evidence to make that objection, that specific objection.
No, Your Honor, what I'm saying the state followed the rules of evidence with regards to the adjudication and the termination. What I'm saying is, in his brief, in his assignments of error, I don't know what statements, what pieces of evidence the appellant is stating that came in against the rule of evidence. His error.
Well, I was kind of with you on that because the case law says, you know, you have to specifically object.
Correct.
And it seems to me that one way of looking at this is to determine whether there were specific objections to a question or a piece of evidence that was being offered when the rules of evidence needed to be followed as opposed to when they didn't.
Correct, Your Honor. And in the appellant's reply brief, with regards he did at least specify witnesses that I can come back and argue. Chris Wicks and April Blevins, both therapists. saying that the rules of evidence were not followed. Well, I would say that that testimony, but for the discrimination, the best interest part, would come in under in my interest of BR, where under a 3A adjudication, where the strict rules of evidence, a therapist was able to testify to what a foster parent stated. The therapist, Ms. Blevins and Chris Wick, both testified to what the children stated. So I believe all that testimony would come in, and what the strict rules of evidence were strictly followed. It would come in under 1, 2, 3, or 4. I think what this comes down to is a best interest. On the appellant made a lot of arguments of speedy trial. Well, that's discretionary, not mandatory, and I think the record's pretty clear who made the motions to continue. They didn't. It was continued in January on the appellant's motion. It was continued again in March on the appellant's motion. They did not. They were ready to proceed in January, March, and then in June. I think it's just a kind of a roundabout way of trying to avoid the bigger picture of the best interest, what's in the best interest of these five little kids. And I think the state proved by clear and convincing evidence that it is in these kids' best interest that the mother's rights are terminated. These five kids have suffered some of the most horrific abuse in my 4 years as a county attorney I've ever seen. And it's hard when it is a failure to protect on a parent to adequately state what they've done wrong. But I think when you look at it from as a whole, you have four of your five kids who've been molested by at least one. You have a child, Gabby, who was diagnosed with genital herpes at age 5 by mom's husband. You have Alex, who was molested by his mom's brother in June of 2007, and then by mom's boyfriend in October of 2007, then 6 months later. And I think that the trying statement that caused the state to say enough is enough. These kids have been grown up, and this mother is never going to protect. She's never going to choose her children's needs over the need to have a man in her life. And when Officer Hiller showed up on October 1st, and the mother said, "I don't believe my daughter. I don't believe he did this." None of her kids have made up a story like this in the past. You have two men in this mother's life who are serving at least 50 years in jail for molesting their children. I think this comes down, I think the appellant has made a lot of fancy arguments, but it comes down to best interest. I believe that the trial court was correct in combining the adjudication. I think the rules of evidence were followed, and I think the state has met its burden. So the state is requesting that this court affirm Judge Johnson's ruling that the termination of parental rights of these children is best interest.
Question. Thank you very much. The appellant is out of time, is that correct? Very well, matter will be deemed submitted. Counsel are excused. Thank you very much for being here this morning. This completes the session of the Court of Appeals.